Hey there, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Film Room Podcast, and I am your host, Andy Proctor. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Dylan Olson. In this show, we're going to break down the game of college football for you and give you a quick listen, scouting report, and give you everything you'll need to know each week as your favorite college football team buckles up their chin straps. Listen in and level up. The Film Room is your weekly game plan. All right, Dylan. Here we are, first week of the 12-man college football playoff. We are officially in the postseason, and I couldn't be any more excited.
Yeah, I have. I am overall excited. I have a lot of mixed emotions about it, but.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I have a feeling we're going to delve into that at some point.
Maybe.
Get in. Let's do this. Let's kind of just give a brief overview of what's going on this week, what we'd like to discuss, and kind of just an overview of what we're going to talk about today, what today's episode is about, and then we can dive in a little bit closer. So we've talked before about this podcast, mainly a Utah Utes BYU Cougars podcast, but this week, and you guys will notice last week we didn't post, this week we're a little bit shy on Utah and BYU content. Next week we'll have an episode to preview BYU's matchup against the Colorado Buffaloes and their Heisman winner. But for this week, we wanted to just talk very briefly about the first round of the college football playoff. We have four pretty awesome matchups coming up, and I think we're just going to do a very brief overview, just things to keep in mind, maybe some light predictions, some easy predictions for these games, and see kind of where we think this whole thing is going to go.
Okay.
Excuse me.
So I think we're going to, because BYU's playing the Heisman, I think we're probably going to maybe hold off on the like awards part of college football till next week. Okay. Unless you had something else in mind.
I kind of want to talk about it today, but also I could talk about it next week because it just happened, right? So right now the Heisman news is big. Everyone's buzzing.
That's a
about
good point.
Hunter Travis. Travis Hunter, winning over Ashton Janti. I'm sure you and I will want to talk about it next week as we will be going into the game against the Heisman winner. So maybe we have a brief discussion about that as well.
That's actually a good idea. And maybe we can get more detailed if we want to later on.
I'm sure, so, like I said, I'm sure next week as we are prepping for the game against Colorado, I'm sure we're going to have plenty to say as we watch film on Travis Hunter and all that. So I'm sure it will come up again next week.
Okay, so before we dive into the CFP games, I do want to ask just a quick reaction. What are your thoughts on BYU versus Colorado?
I think we could have gotten a worse draw. You know, like I think that there were some other teams being floated. Like nothing against Washington State. You know, I think they have a good history as a program, but I think just kind of like being left as the dregs of the Pac-12, and yes, they played a good year, but they ended on a bad note. I was not really hyped about that matchup. I was hoping for BYU to get matched up against someone like Miami.
I thought we won a lot of Miami fun game.
You know, Miami, or like say Clemson had lost in the ACC championship game. Like a Clemson game would have been really fun. I think that Colorado, it's like, okay, this is a game. Like we've seen Colorado play a lot of times over the last couple of years as Utah fans. You know, as BYU fans, like it'll be fun to have a crack at them. I think the story is a lot more entertaining because of Deion Sanders and his boys and Travis Hunter. And now, especially the Heisman thing, you know, I think we're going to have a lot more eyes on this game than we would have if we had been playing, you know, some other team. So I'm not super upset about it. I obviously wish that BYU was playing in the CFP, but
they blew that chance.
It's neither here nor there. Yes.
So, well,
what about you? What do you think about it?
So I think this is kind of the matchup I figured was going to happen. At one point I was really worried we were going to get matched up against Washington State, which a 10-2 ranked Washington State. That's actually not a bad matchup, but they lost two bad games, including to Wyoming at home, to finish off. I think they went 0-3 in their last three. And I was like, ooh, that's not a good look. So I was worried we were going to get shafted. I was hoping for Miami. I figured we'd probably get Colorado. And honestly, I know it's like, oh, it's a Big 12 opponent, but we didn't play him this year. It's Deion Sanders. It's the Heisman winner. It's Shador Sanders, who, by the way, I think is third nationally in passing yards. So that should be a really fun matchup. I'm excited for it. There will be a lot of eyeballs on it. It's kind of a glamorous matchup. So I think overall I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, it should be a good game. I'm excited to watch some film and prep for it next week. I've kind of missed having like a purposeful week of watching film and like knowing what's coming ahead of watching some football, as opposed to the last couple weeks I've just been kind of watching just for fun, which has been kind of nice. But
yeah.
Anyway, so going into this week, we have four college football playoff games. Starting at the top of the bracket, we have number 8 Ohio State versus number 9 seeded the Tennessee Volunteers. We also have the 5th-ranked Texas Longhorns versus the 12th-ranked Clemson Tigers. Number 6-ranked Nittany Lion. The Nittany Lions or Nittany Lion, singular?
I think it's plural.
Lions against the number 11-seeded SMU Mustangs. Then we have number 7, Notre Dame, over number 10, Indiana. So I believe we're going to go just a couple notes over some of those games. Were there any of those games you wanted to jump into first, ones that you felt were the most maybe the most promising as far as a game or most interesting as far as a matchup is concerned?
No, I have them in chronological order as to when they're going to take place. Okay. But that's just the way I've written them, but I am neither here nor there for any of them.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do it that way.
Okay, so I believe what's happening first is you've got a in-state matchup between Indiana and Notre Dame.
I didn't even put those two together. That's amazing. What a cool thing for the state of Indiana.
Yeah, that's pretty fun for them. And what a season for the Hoosiers, man. So just a quick preview. So Indiana is the 8th seed and Notre Dame is the 5th seed. I think that's about how they rank. However, I think, you know, ASU and Clemson are ranked much lower than their seeding, which is, you know, interesting to say the least. But so Indiana, so basically what I've done is I was able to get three of these matchups and just kind of do some quick, like, just kind of a quick hits on like players and some team stats and then kind of some thoughts. So I'll start with Indiana's offense. Curtis Rourke is their quarterback, number 9. He's 6'5". He's
a tall dude.
Yeah, he's 2,800 passing yards. He has a really high, he's 70% completion percentage. He's got 27 touchdowns and 4 picks. He doesn't run the ball.
Pretty solid numbers, man.
Yeah, they're really good. He does not run the ball a whole lot, and he's efficient. He doesn't
really need to run the ball a whole lot, though.
Yeah, no, he doesn't, especially they have two really pretty, you know, solid running backs. Run at number 6, Justice Ellison, and number 17, Tyson Lawton. Ellison has 800 yards. Lawton has 630 yards. They're both averaging, so 5.5 and 4.8 per carry. They together account for 22 touchdowns. They're pretty efficient. I do want to note Curtis Rourke for Indiana has been sacked 11 times in the last 3 games. So I think 5 of those came against Ohio State. So that's kind of a, you know, something to.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a butt whooping there, 38-15 in Columbus. So.
we were all Hoosier fans that day, but I think, you know. So, and then they do have receiver Elijah Serrett. I don't know how to say that, but 890 yards. So he's got about 74 a game. He's got 8 touchdowns. They do spread the ball around pretty well. So the thing about Indiana's offense is it's efficient. It's good. I just don't think, like, nothing stands out in terms of their team stats, so to speak. You know, their 40th right. is good, but they're 40th in yards per game, 60th in rush yards per game. I think they're about middle of the road in pass yards. I think Indiana's strength comes with their defense. They're 6th nationally, allowing 15.7 points per game. 3rd nationally, allowing 256 yards per game. 1st nationally in run defense, 76 yards allowed per game. And then they're top 25. Yeah, they're top 25 in pass yards allowed and in takeaways. So I'm hoping this doesn't totally just turn into like reading off a bunch of stats. But the criticism that Indiana gets is they didn't play anyone, right?
And yeah, that's, I was just about to say, you know, when you're looking at their schedule, their best wins, in my mind, are against Michigan, 15-20, who, you know, obviously Michigan is having a down year. That's for sure. But I think Michigan's still a quality program. And when you're a team like Indiana, who you've been losing to Michigan like every year for the last whoever knows how long, you know, that's gotta be a game that's tough to win in just mentally, you know. But, you know, besides that game, the other game that was impressive to me was they beat Nebraska 56-7. Now, Nebraska ended up being not like a total flop, but they didn't end up being what everyone thought they would be this year.
I think they were ranked going into that game, though.
Oh, were they?
I think so.
Still, so maybe that's impressive, you know. But it was 56-7, so that's pretty impressive.
Their margin of victory in most games is something I think they're kind of hanging their hat on.
Quite large, yeah. But I think the most telling thing is that when they played number 2 ranked Ohio State, which, by the way, looking at Ohio State's record and their their resume,
yeah,
they are good. I would put a lot of money on Ohio State going a long way through the playoff, and I think that's very telling that they lost that game 38-15. Like, I think that's a true test of how they are going to do against high talent.
Yeah,
you know, we haven't delved too much into Notre Dame right now, but just based on that, if they play a quality program, which at this point all the teams left in the playoff are quality programs, I think they're going to struggle. I think they're already pitted up against the wall in my mind.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that because Notre Dame, and we'll get into some of their key guys, but you can kind of say the same thing about Notre Dame and that they haven't played anyone. I think their most impressive wins are against Army and Navy, and
yeah,
Army and Navy, I mean, Army didn't really play anyone, and then they got beat up on pretty bad by Navy this weekend. And I don't want to like say that those teams aren't good, because I do think Army and Navy are solid teams this year. I just think playing the academies is different because of the way they're set up, you know. Yeah. As a triple option teams, it's like the triple option can be really, really dangerous and tough to defend, but if you can figure it out and you have the players to do it, then it can cause problems. And I think that's kind of what Notre Dame's defense did. And they did have a win against A&M early in the season, Texas A&M. Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. I was going to say, I disagree with you a little bit on the case that they didn't play anybody. I mean, yeah, a lot of the teams they beat, you know, Purdue, Northern Illinois, Miami, Ohio. Well,
they lost to Northern Illinois.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yes, yeah, that's right. They did lose that game. A lot of the teams they played were not great, but they had a win against, at the time, top 20 ranked A&M. They had a win, I think this is the best one of their season, against Georgia Tech, 31-13.
I was going to say Georgia Tech and Louisville are actually both really good wins.
And yeah, I mean, Louisville, I don't know where they ended up ranked at the end of the year, but at the time they were ranked 15th. So, you know, a top 15 AP poll, you know, win, I think in my mind is a good win.
Yeah. So. No, that's a really good point. I guess, I'm really unimpressed with, like, well, not unimpressed, but I guess I'm just kind of like, all right, well, Purdue, Miami, Ohio, a really bad Florida State team in Virginia are not a whole lot to hang your hat on. But you're right. Yeah. Louisville, like Georgia Tech, A&M, Navy, Army are all solid wins.
Yeah, like they have good wins. Don't get me wrong. They have some good wins. But like when you compare it to Ohio's resume, like, and we'll talk about this later when we talk about Tennessee, Ohio State, but like Ohio State played number 5 ranked Indiana, number 3 ranked Penn State, and number 2 ranked Oregon. So 3 games in the top 5. Like that's a resume that stands out a ton, no matter what your results were against those teams. So, you know, Notre Dame losing to an unranked NIU and then having 2, you know, 15 or top 15 or top 20 wins, those are okay. Those are good wins. But it just doesn't stand out as much. But I still think it stands out way more than Indiana's schedule and their record. I would pick, and I did pick, I'm going to go by my bracket that I used in this other group of friends. I'm going to pick Notre Dame to win this game. And I'm going to, it's not going to be a total blowout, but I think it's going to get like out of reach for Indiana kind of early. Like I think it's going to be one of those games where Indiana gets behind by just enough early on where they feel like this severe lack of hope all game long. Like they're going to get like 7 or 10 points behind the whole game. And I think they're going to try to be playing catch up the entire time. You know what I mean? It ends up being like, you know, 21-14 or 21-10 at halftime. And then it finishes like a 35-28 type of game or something like that.
Yeah. I guess before I get into my thoughts and prediction, I do want to point out that Indiana's defense has Mikhail Kamara, who is 8th nationally in sacks. I forgot to write the number, but I think it's 11 sacks. And I guess, so I do want to point out Notre Dame's strength is their run offense, and they spread the ball. They have 3 players with 650 rush yards or more, including their quarterback, Riley Leonard. So they've got a guy named Jeremiah Love on over 900 yards, and then another running back, Jadarian Price, with 650. And I guess I'm just like their strength. It's kind of a strength versus strength matchup. I picked Notre Dame to win, but the spread's 7.5 and I'm going to pick Indiana to cover. I went 27-24 really? Notre Dame. Yeah. And you know, you're probably closer, but I want to pick the underdog to do well. Spoiler alert, I don't have, much faith in kind of the underdog teams in terms of how you typically see the college football playoff. I think Arizona State's the best chance to get a win. And I really want these teams to, I want one of them at least to get a win, because I hate like the confirmation bias that the college football playoff committee gets all the time, where it's like, oh yeah, well, yeah, you know, we see that.
Told you.
Yeah. We told you we should have put Bama in. And I'm like, no, Bama didn't. Which that brings in the discussion of like earn versus deserve, but I'm like, no, Bama didn't earn the spot. So, but I wanted to point out that on, Notre Dame is pretty good at spreading the ball around in terms of receivers as well. And then Notre Dame's 3rd nationally in points per game with 39.8. And, they're also 11th nationally in their rushing So that'll be interesting. Their defense really stands out too. They're third nationally, only behind BYU and Duke in takeaways per game with 2.3.
Wow. That's a lot of takeaways per game.
Yeah, they're seventh nationally in opponent yards per game.
If they were BYU, people would be saying that those takeaways are lucky.
Yeah. I don't know. When you're first overall in the nation, I don't think it's luck anymore. So, in my opinion. But third nationally in opposing pass yards per game. They only allow just under 160 pass yards per game. So I'm like, and under 14 points per game scored. So I guess Notre Dame, I would expect them to win this. And it probably going to be something more like, 27-17 or 16 or something. But I decided to give Indiana a little bit of a something there. So, yeah. Any other thoughts on that, or should we move on to SMU Penn State?
No, I think let's move on to SMU and Penn State. So this is a game that we played this coming Saturday at 10 a.m.
We forgot to mention these are like home and away games.
Yeah. So they're.
So it'll be in South Bend at Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I should have. And then this one will be SMU at Penn State.
Yeah. Which, can I just say, like, in all my years growing up playing NCAA college football, I have always enjoyed Penn State as a program. I think they have really amazing history. I like their program. It's a very tough program. I feel like they, in a way, even though I have a deep resentment towards them for them beating Utah in the Rose Bowl back in 2022, I feel like there's actually a lot of similarities. There are a lot of similarities between Penn State and Utah. Like, they're a program that's always competitive, pretty much. They might have a down year every once in a while, but they just never seem to be able to make it. They're always good enough to be around and to be considered, but they never have enough to get the job done all the way. They're tough runners. They have good running backs, typically speaking. They develop some fine quarterbacks. They're known for having a pretty good defense. But I feel kind of a kinship with Penn State.
Yeah, it's really. And we don't need to totally get into this. It's kind of a shame that Penn State had that whole scandal. And it probably set their program back a little ways, but they've kind of come back into it. But Penn State really are a historic program. They have, there are a lot of really great players that have come from there, including Saquon Barkley, who's just revitalization with the Eagles has been pretty amazing this year. But, the interesting thing about Penn State is I think I saw, what was it, before their game against Oregon, they were like 32-2 or maybe 1 against any team they had played in the last, in this current coach's tenure, not named Ohio State or Michigan. And then he was 1-16 against teams named Ohio State or Michigan. And I was like, they couldn't. With how top heavy the Big Ten is, I'm like, they just can't win the big game, which, like you said, kind of like Utah is competitive, but they seem to fall short in the big game. And, they did get those two Pac-12 championships, but, as far as the Rose Bowl goes, and, so it's just interesting with Penn State, and this is a very big game, but it's against SMU. And as much as I really like this SMU team, and we'll kind of get into it a little bit, Penn State's favored by 8.5. And this is one where I don't expect SMU to cover despite how much I like them. So,
really?
Yeah. And this could be me just being random. I don't know. But I think Penn State 38-24 is what I went with. In favor of Penn State.
Yeah. This is going to be a really interesting game for me, I think, because you have a team in Penn State who is a tried and true Big Ten power. Like it's no secret what playing Penn State is like, right? And just knowing kind of where they stand as a program. Like you just said, did they ever win the big game? Not really, usually, right? They usually lose against Michigan. They usually lose against Ohio State. If they get into a big bowl game, it's kind of sixes, you know. They might do really well, they might not. But however, so you've got that kind of program that is a standard in the Big Ten, arguably one of the best two of the football conferences, versus now SMU, who is coming from the American conference.
Yeah, they're American.
They are a brand new ACC team. And I think, you know, the ACC has kind of been in flux there as, you know, when we had five power conferences, they were maybe the third best conference or maybe the fourth, or it was super top heavy with Clemson and then nobody else really doing anything. So it'll be really interesting to see a brand new SMU team come in.
Well, to be fair, Florida State went undefeated last year and got left out of the college football playoff.
True. There's that as well.
But
all I'm saying is that we have a new team in a conference, a Power Four conference now, and we're going to see really how much equality there is between these conferences. You know, a new team like SMU coming in and almost winning, they should have won if they had just kicked the ball in the end zone. They should have had a chance to win the ACC. And we're going to see, is it a new ACC almost champion? Do they hold up against a perennial Big Ten power? Or is it just going to be a total blowout? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, so according to College Football Insiders, they've got a lot of really cool advanced stats, some of which I'm still learning about. But they have Penn State with a 56.7% win probability. They're projected 28 points to SMU's 26 points.
Okay.
I'm rounding a little bit there. So maybe I'm not going to, but maybe I should revise my my score line there as well, just as a quick Notre Dame's projected 27 points to Indiana's 23. Notre Dame has a 63% win probability. Yeah, it's kind of a cool. So College Football Insiders, they're not paying me to say this, which maybe I shouldn't say it then, but I'm going to say it anyway. They have some really cool, if you go to collegefootballinsiders.com, you can look up like matchup previews and they'll give you rankings on advanced stats, and you can just pull up the schedule and look up any like of the bowl games going on right now. And they give you, they'll give you EPA margins and success rate, and they'll give you, you know, just lots of different things, and they'll also match them up against the other team. And you can get sort of an advanced metrics look at what's going on. So anyway, it's just kind of cool, but, I'd like to see SMU put up a fight. They were so dang close in that Clemson game, man, but
they were,
you got to wonder how that shakes out. They probably got a bye week and we're probably looking at, we're probably looking at Bama in the playoff. But yeah, just a true, completely different bracket, you know? So ASU's probably playing this weekend too, if they don't, if, SMU wins that game, but,
yeah, probably right.
So anyway, I mean, we're familiar with some of the SMU guys. They got Kevin Jennings. They got, you know, they've got Breshard Smith, 17th in the NCAA in total rush yards. He's got 1,270.
That's a decent amount.
What was that?
That's a decent amount.
Oh, yeah. I thought you said Sani Sanaa, and I was like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, Dylan, you know, Sani Sanaa, of course.
So
that's probably some really vulgar phrase in some random language. That
well, we might get marked explicit in whatever country. So anyway, Breshard Smith is really good. Kevin Jennings is solid. I think they're pretty balanced with their receivers. They got two guys over 500 receiving yards. they rank pretty well in terms of stats. And there's an argument that SMU didn't really play anyone. But my biggest thing is that they are second nationally, allowing 2.8 yards per rush.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible.
So they're not, I mean, the ACC isn't really like a powerhouse run conference necessarily, but they held Clemson running back Phil Maffa, who's got 1,100 plus yards this season, to 28 yards in the ACC title game on 13 carries. Yeah. Also, so he was averaging like 2 yards a carry, basically.
Yeah. And again, I think I'm disagreeing more with what the people are saying, not necessarily what you were saying.
No, I get what you mean.
I think they have three quality wins on their schedule. I think they have a win against, at the time, number 22 ranked Louisville. They have a win against, at the time, number 18 ranked Pitt. And they have a win against, at the time, unranked BYU, but a BYU team that got ranked as high as number 6 in the country.
Lost to BYU.
Excuse me. That's what I was going to say. That was another game that they played, just in general, they played close. That could have been a win for them.
I still can't believe BYU won that game, the more I think about it.
Yeah, if they hadn't made this last second field goal, a close loss against BYU. So they have two quality wins against Louisville and Pitt, and two quality losses against BYU and Clemson. Really, those two, their biggest losses, their only two losses, came by 3 points each.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I'll be
super killer for them.
I will be rooting for them. I like Penn State as well, but I'll be rooting for SMU, just underdog factor. I grew to really like their coach. And so anyway, it'll be really interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how their rush defense holds up against a team like Penn State, because like I said, the ACC isn't necessarily like, I mean, you think Big Ten, most of the teams, I mean, you're thinking of Michigan lining up like 7 tight ends on the field and no quarterbacks or receivers. And, you know, like, so that's what you think of with Big Ten football, unless it's Ohio State. And so with that, it'll be interesting to see, okay, well, SMU, let's see, you know, can your defense still hold up against these guys? So I'll be excited to, I think it'll still be a fun game to watch. I do, like I said, I still think Penn State's going to kind of handle it pretty well, but
yeah, I think for me, and just because I'm not as familiar with each of these teams, I'm kind of doing, you know, it's not the most, advanced sports, analysis, but I'm kind of using the best wins versus best losses.
Yeah.
You know, comparing those two best wins for SMU and their best losses to Penn State. I think Penn State's best wins are against the number 19 Illinois, against a USC team that struggled this year, against UCLA. You know, they didn't, you know, a couple of their other games this year they played weren't necessarily all that great. Their only top 25 matchups that they... Well, their only top 10 matchups that they played, they lost to Ohio State 20-13 and to Oregon 45-37, which, you know, granted, they did make a game out of it at the end there against Oregon, but they never really stood a chance and really in that game whatsoever. So I think this game is going to be closer than we think. I still think that Penn State's going to pull it out. But I think it's going to be closer than we would imagine. I'm going to go with something like 17-14.
Yeah, I actually, I'm sticking with my prediction, but actually looking back, I'm like, oh, I think I got it very wrong, because I'm looking at, okay, Penn State runs the ball. They don't allow a lot of points. By the way, they're also 7th in the nation in opposing points per game. They only allow 16 points per game. SMU does the same thing. This is probably a 17-13, a 20-16 type of game.
Right.
I just want to point out too that Penn State has a guy named Abdul Carter at defensive end, who's tied for, depending on if you do like golf rankings or not, either 12th if you do golf rankings or 9th nationally with 10 sacks. And I think it'll be interesting to see how he contains Kevin Jennings, because that could be a major issue with for SMU, you know, because I think that's one of Jennings' strengths is his mobility. And so, you know,
Kevin Jennings, he's that really good SMU quarterback that didn't play against BYU, right? Oh, wait. No, he did. That's right.
He didn't start against BYU, and he went in this, I don't know if you remember, but they were doing the whole two quarterback thing. And that was the game where he won sort of the starting job over Preston Stone. But yeah, no,
that was my joke, was that BYU didn't deserve to be in because their win against SMU came when Jennings wasn't playing quarterback, but then he was.
Was that something that they said?
Yeah, I think you had sent me the tweet, honestly. Someone said that, you know, gosh, you know, BYU, their win against SMU is not really that impressive because their most productive quarterback, you know, didn't play that game. And it's like, then we looked back and it was like,
he literally totally played almost
the entire game.
He only didn't play one series.
Yeah, exactly. So I have to laugh at that.
Jeez, so. Dude, sometimes the committee...
The committee and their for hire sports network.
Seriously,
who I use faithfully. So I'm a huge hypocrite. Anyway, let's jump in really quickly to Clemson and Texas.
Okay. Biggest spread I think of the four games. By the way,
yes, yeah, Clemson definitely snuck in. No one really expected them to be in, except for maybe Dabo. And all of his guys. This game will be played in Austin. The 12th ranked, or I guess 12th seeded Clemson Tigers at 10-3 versus the 5th seeded Texas Longhorns at 11-2. I know you have some data real quick, but just to kind of set the scene, I'd like to just review each of the team's best wins.
No, I love this. Losses. I'm a big fan of this.
Yeah, so you know, Clemson, they had kind of just a kind of a meh year with the ACC. They didn't have a lot of teams that they got to play this year that were truly truly competitive. They did lose to Louisville before,
which
Louisville,
by the way, maybe in the season review we can talk about my mini thoughts about bloated conferences.
Oh, it's so hard. Like, how do you know who's good? Yeah, we'll talk about it then. Sorry. Before I start that tangent, that would be a great conversation to have.
Sorry,
we should
my
totally
bad.
Have that conversation. They lost. It was, I guess, a good loss to Louisville, who would eventually end up being ranked. They had a loss against South Carolina, number 15th ranked South Carolina, the week before the ACC championship game, and then they got smoked by Georgia, first game of the year, 34-3. So I hate to say it, but like all of their other wins against Appalachian State, NC State, Stanford, Florida State, Wake Forest, Virginia, all these other teams, Virginia Tech, they won games. And that's, I guess, the kind of the thing that I love about the new playoff situation. It's like, if you win enough games to put yourself in the position to earn a spot in your conference championship, and then you win the one game that matters, which is number 17 Clemson against number 8 SMU. You know, hey, you won your conference. You earned that spot, even if you didn't play a lot of really impressive games or win a lot of games against impressive teams. I guess I might phrase it that way. Do you know what I mean? So this by far, you know, number 5 Texas, except for their game against, at the time ranked number 1 Georgia, will be their biggest game of the year. For sure.
Yeah.
And then going on to Texas's schedule, so they had a couple big wins. They started off the year with a big win against number 10 Michigan, who ended up not being the Michigan that we are used to seeing, especially over the last couple of years. They were more the Michigan of the last, you know, 6 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. They had a win over, at the time ranked number 18 Oklahoma, which is a big game. They had, I guess, a good loss. I don't know if you can call it a good loss. 30-15 against number 5 ranked Georgia at the time. The next week, they did beat number 25th ranked Vanderbilt, who I believe they were ranked 25th that week because it was the week they came off of beating
Alabama.
Pretty sure. They beat A&M, which is a good win, number 20th ranked A&M. And then they lost to Georgia again.
In overtime.
In the SEC championship. In overtime in the SEC championship. So Texas, you know, I hate to say it, I know they're your team, Dion, but Texas finding a way to do Texas things. We thought they were back as of last year, winning the championship. And who knows, they may very well maybe again this year. They may be back to you know, defend. I guess they're the defending champions until they aren't, right?
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see, you know, if which Texas are we going to get? I feel like it's one of two. It's never the middle of the road. It's either a Texas team that comes out and like gets stuff done, or they come out and they're flat and they're making mistakes and they're not performing to the level that they should be able to. So
who does that sound like? More
BYU.
Yep.
BYU, Utah. Why don't you give us a little more info about these two teams, Dion? What do you see on both sides of the ball? What do you like? What do you think makes a difference?
The biggest thing is Texas's offense is like, I mean, it's not bad. It's a good offense, right? Texas's strength is in their defense. They rank in the top 10 in like most major categories. So second nationally allowing 12 points per game. Second nationally allowing 249 yards per game. Sixth nationally allowing 30% third down conversion. Top 15 in rush defense. First nationally in pass defense in yards per game allowed. And they get just over two. They force just over two turnovers a game, which is good for seventh nationally. So that's really where it comes from. They've got solid linebacking core with a guy named Anthony Hill Jr., number zero. He's got 90 tackles, 7.5 sacks. And then they do have a linebacker, number 11, Colin Simmons, who has 8 sacks. I just think that on defense, they're really solid. And then obviously they got Quinn Ewers playing quarterback, and he's pretty good. I think this game is going to come down to Clemson's quarterback, Cade Klubnik. Can he do something? He's 11th nationally in pass yards with 3,300. He's got 33 touchdowns and 5 interceptions, which is an amazing TDINT ratio. And I just think he can ball and he can squirm and run a little bit too. So I think that's going to come down to like, all right, Cade, what do you got? Show us what you got. That'll be tough against a really good Texas secondary as well. I went with Texas winning 30-20. So a solid 2-score win, but not quite covering the spread. That was my, I just kind of wonder if Clemson maybe, they looked really strong towards the end of the year, and I wonder if maybe they just had a few games kind of get away from them during their season. The thing about Texas, too, is with their defense, I think a lot of the time defense, like, wins championships, right? That's the popular saying. But I think defense can, like, make games close. Like, for instance, I kind of think, I don't know, maybe I'm dumb. I'm just a guy in my closet. But, like, for instance, with the Chiefs, everyone's like, how are the Chiefs getting so lucky? They're winning all these one-score games. And I personally am like, I think that the Chiefs are, they're not designing, hey, let's win every game by one score. But I think that their team this year is designed to win a war of attrition and just know, stay in the game, don't let them score, give Patrick Mahomes the ball in the fourth, like, and the final drive, and you're probably going to win the game. They escaped. They had that blocked field goal where they escaped, you know, with a win against the Raiders and stuff. Yeah. But like, I think that's kind of their game plan. And so the reason I bring it up is because Texas, they have some close games like the one against Vanderbilt. And, you know, they only put up 20 against Arkansas, who are not that great. I mean, you want to know who beat Arkansas this year? Oklahoma State, a team with zero Big 12 wins.
I remember that game early on in the year.
Yeah,
that was one of the first films we watched.
Yeah, exactly. So they, you know, but I think Texas has the defense to do it. And so I went with 30-20.
Yeah, I think that's a good prediction. I also think, you know, don't get me wrong, I was super refreshed when Clemson started winning more and more because I was just so tired of Alabama. But I think they had their time. I think not that has anything to do with it, just my preference personally. I think that Texas is back. I think that they hopefully will have had the time to take a long, hard look at themselves in the mirror after giving up a second win to, giving up a second loss to Georgia this year. I think they're going to be pissed off. I think they're going to be hungry, ready to go. I think that Texas is going to beat Clemson 31-17.
Okay. So that college football insiders have Texas winning 72% win probability. They have them winning 28-20. So I think you're a little bit closer than I am. Wait, what did you say? 21-17?
31-17.
31-17. Okay.
Should we move on to the last game?
Yeah, let's do it. Ohio State, Tennessee.
Yep. We've got number 9 seeded Tennessee Volunteers at number 8 Ohio State Buckeyes in Columbus. Okay. This is the last of the first round games. This will take place on Saturday at 6, which, by the way, I guess we kind of have been inconsistent with that. Indiana Notre Dame will be on Friday night at 6 p.m. SMU Penn State in the morning on Saturday at 10 a.m. Then Clemson Texas at 2 p.m. and Tennessee Ohio State at 6 p.m. So it's going to be literally a full day of football.
Full Tennessee Ohio Friday State's night. The one I'm most interested in.
Yeah. So coming into this game, you know, Tennessee and Ohio State both 10-2. Looking at their seasons, Tennessee's biggest wins came against number 24 ranked NC State. At the time, number 15 ranked Oklahoma, kind of meh at this point, and number 7 Alabama, which I think is a very notable win. Their most notable losses came against number 12 Georgia at the time and unranked Arkansas. Okay.
Oh gosh. That's a bad loss.
Isn't that crazy? Like, you see the football math. It's like Tennessee lost to Arkansas, who lost to Oklahoma State.
Who didn't win a Big 12 game.
Yeah.
Although they were really dang close.
Right? Any given Saturday. So you had a game. You had games like that that make a big difference for Tennessee. Ohio State also 10-2. Their biggest wins. Again, I think these are very impressive wins. I think Ohio State... we'll see. They're the biggest ones. Number 5 Indiana and number 3 Penn State. The biggest losses against number 2 Oregon and unranked Michigan.
They manhandled Indiana.
They manhandled Indiana. But I think that stands out less to me than losing to Michigan. I think that, you know, that loss to Michigan is really a big mar on their record there. I mean, it's a very, very impressive resume overall. Nothing takes away from how impressive their resume is this year, except for maybe just a small blemish with that loss to unranked Michigan, which we say it every year with BYU and Utah, and it applies even more to this game. More
the so game.
Than any, yeah, the game. It doesn't matter how good or bad either of these two teams is. It's going to be a battle. Just because there's so much emotion behind it. So those are kind of the biggest, you know, I think contributing outcomes for these two teams on either end of the season.
Can I just say something real quick?
Of course, go ahead.
Just as a quick note on the Ohio State-Michigan game. So if I've said this already on one of our pods, I'm sorry. But so my older brother went to med school at Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And the week of the Michigan game, they put a red slash through every single M on the Ohio State campus.
Really? That's wild.
It's pretty cool.
That's commitment, man.
You know, and then that's where, for BYU Utah fans, the whole TDS, Team Down South thing, that's originally a Michigan-Ohio State thing where I can't remember the coach, but Ohio State coach referred to them as the team up north.
Yeah. Yeah.
And ironically, you know, Urban Meyer was the guy who came up with the TDS, right?
Yeah, which I think, you know, he came kind of from that side of the country. He was at Bowling Green beforehand. I'm sure he, you know, saw that part of football culture and just applied it to this region. And then, yeah, obviously he ended up at Ohio State. So,
yeah. Anyway, sorry, unrelated. I just thought it was fun.
Any other wins or losses on the schedules that I think are notable? So let's just go ahead and dive into some of the personnel. Very quickly, on Tennessee's side, number 8, Nico Iamaleava. Very impressive individual. He's got 199 completions for just about 66% completion percentage. He's got 2,500 yards, 19 touchdowns, and 5 interceptions, which is pretty impressive. But he's also been sacked 24 times, which is a lot. That's a lot of sacks.
That is a lot.
Number 6, running back, Dylan Sampson. He's got 256 carries for 1,485 yards. He averages about 6 yards per carry, and he's got 22 touchdowns. So he does a good volume of their offense on the ground. And then their leading wide receiver, actually, Dante Thornton Jr., very, very little, actually. They spread the ball around quite a lot, because he, as their leading receiver, has 25 receptions for 647 yards. So not a ton. They definitely spread it around a little bit, which I think kind of speaks volumes to the balance and the depth that they have there at Tennessee. You know, obviously they've got one guy in Dylan Sampson at the running back position that does a good volume of their offense. But
he's 9th in the nation, by the way, in rush yards.
Oh, Dylan Sampson is?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it tracks, because without him, they would have to rely on their well-rounded passing offense, right? But I guess if we dive in then on the defensive side of the ball for Tennessee, and sorry, my data's pulling up slow here.
No, you're good.
They, as a team, they typically allow 15 points per game, which is about 20 points less than what other teams typically will allow them. Okay, they'll average about 34.5 points a game. They allow 283 yards of offense, while their offense tends to average about 440. So it's quite favorable for Tennessee in regards to their offensive and defensive performance, just in general. However, compared to Ohio State averages kind of similarly on offense, about 35 points per game, so one more point per game, but they only allow about 11 points of offensive production from the defensive side, which is a difference of about 3 points. So a little bit of an advantage to the Ohio State defense, just in general. And then as far as yards of production, yeah, same thing. Ohio State gets about 420, so there's a little bit less than Tennessee does, and about 240 yards of offensive production allowed to the other team, whereas Tennessee usually allows 280. So,
well, you know what's crazy?
What's that?
Tennessee runs the ball about 61% of the time.
Yeah.
But if you look at like their yards per game and then you look at their rush yards per game, it's like split half and half between pass and rush yards per game. So I think they're pretty efficient in their pass game, despite some of their like statistics. If you were to just look at their like team passing statistics in terms of like completion and yards, passes per game, pass yards per game, you'd be like, okay, they're kind of like middle of the road to even, yeah, it's about middle of the road. But if you look, it's like, oh, maybe it seems like they're pretty efficient with it. So anyway.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I mean, if they're doing a decent amount of their production on the ground and they're not doing a ton of it through the air, whatever of it they do through the air, they have to score, you know, more points in fewer yards in order to make up that difference. So,
yeah.
On the Ohio State side of the ball, number 18 quarterback Will Howard. He is 227 for 314 for 2,860 yards, about 350 yards more passing yards than Nico Iamaleava.
Dude, 72% completion. That is,
yeah, he's got you know, 7 more points of completion on the percentage there. He's got 27 touchdowns compared to Nico's 19. He's got a couple more interceptions. Eight interceptions total compared to 5, but he's only been sacked 10 times.
That's really good protection, man.
Yeah.
And I
wonder if maybe he'd taken just 3 more sacks, maybe his interceptions would equal Nico's, but still pretty impressive, able to avoid the pressure, able to get out of those positions where he might get taken down. One of those sacks, I'm sure it wasn't a sack, but one of the, I'm sure he wishes he had one more incompletion on his stat sheet, was the incompletion that he should have thrown when he should have thrown the ball out of bounds when he ran the clock out while they were losing to Oregon.
Yeah. So just a like kind of random thought here. I don't know. It's just part of this is just a gut feeling, and so I just take it for what it's worth. But I think that if Ohio State, because they'll have to go through Oregon to get to this either the semis or the championship game. I think if Ohio State can get through Oregon, I think that they're the most likely champions.
Oh, for sure. I totally agree.
You know, so. Yeah. It'll be really interesting to see how that goes. Whereas, like, I think Oregon are probably the best team in college football. But I could see Oregon losing to, like, a handful of teams in the playoff where I'm like, yeah. I don't know if I see Ohio State losing
they
anyone
almost,
not
they
named
almost
Oregon.
Lost to Boise State earlier in the year, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ohio State also has number 32, Travion Henderson. That's a name we've heard a lot this year. Surprisingly, he's had to split his load with Quinshon Judkins, number 1. Each of them have, Judkins has 805 yards of rushing. Travion Henderson has 751 yards. Judkins has 8 touchdowns at 5.5 yards per carry. Henderson has 6 touchdowns at 7 yards per carry. So a couple more yards each attempt for Travion. One or two touchdowns fewer. Number 4, Dylan, you're going to like this name. Jeremiah Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Our best buddy's little brother's name. Number 4, he has 57 receptions for 935 yards. Just
Jeremiah was a bullfrog.
He was a little bullfrog.
Yeah. Well, isn't that a song or a book or something?
Maybe. I don't know. I've never heard that before.
Oh. All right. Well, forget I said anything.
Number 4, Jeremiah Smith, 4 for the Buckeyes, 10 touchdowns on 16.5 yards per catch. So some names and data to go with the overall story. Again, I hate to say it, but I think that Ohio State is just too good for Tennessee in this moment.
Come on, Vols.
You love to see it. You love to see an upset. You love to see different teams in it. You love to see turnover, but I hate to say it, but right now, with the way college football is trending, with the way it's going with the transfer portal and with NIL and new conference alignments and new college football playoff organization, I don't see Ohio State going anywhere.
No.
And I think that, with Tennessee's biggest wins against their biggest win this year is against Alabama. But they dropped a bad one against Arkansas, and they dropped a close one against Georgia. I think that Ohio State's going to walk away with this one probably 35-20.
Advanced metrics say 23-17 or 23-18. Really? Yeah. I don't know why. I am a Volunteers fan. I don't know what it is. I am enamored with them, and so I'll be rooting so hard. But I went with I lost my spot. I went with Ohio State 31-27.
Okay.
So
still pretty close. Higher scoring, but still pretty close.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I don't know, man. Of these teams, so I think both of us picked, none of us picked any of the upsets. I think we picked a few teams to cover the spread, but yeah. I think this is their, I don't know. It's weird because we just both talked about how Ohio State are like, we think are very good, but I think this is the most likely upset possibility is Tennessee versus Ohio State. Yeah, I think so. The margins, you know, the betting line, the betting spread seem to think so. If you go off those advanced stats of College Football Insiders, I think the closer margin was actually between, it was either Indiana, Notre Dame or Penn State, SMU. But, I tend to think that it would be Tennessee, Ohio State, but that's, I don't know. So, yeah, I think Ohio State will win this, though. Yeah.
We will see for sure.
So, can I ask you a question?
Totally.
Okay. How do you see the rest of the, just from a before it all happens, we can analyze once some games have gone further in, but how do you see the college football playoff playing out right from right now?
What do I think will happen or what do I want to happen?
Give me both.
Well, I'll tell you what I filled out for. We did a little bracket with some buddies, and you know what I had going down was basically what I had picked for the first round, at least what we discussed tonight. I think Notre Dame is going to win over Indiana. I think Penn State will win over SMU. I picked Texas over Clemson, and I picked Ohio State over Tennessee. I think that you know those all. I feel kind of lame not picking any upsets, you know, just kind of picking the higher seed across the board. But I truly believe that's what's going to happen. And I don't know that I mean, yeah, it'd be fun to see Tennessee win over Ohio State. I would love to see SMU beat Penn State. I am rooting pretty hard for Notre Dame, and I don't really have any reason to root for Clemson. So I think you're going to end up with Ohio State versus Oregon. And gosh, that one's a toss up. I'm going to have to come back to that one. I think you're going to end up with Texas versus ASU. I think that Texas probably wins that one. But again, I think it's going to be closer than what most people think. I think ASU is good.
I'm not sure Texas know what. I don't think they're ready for the Scatabu train, man.
I don't think so either. So,
like, I think that, like, if I'm being honest, Texas I get that it's Texas. I think they've kind of like they're thinking maybe they're a little too big for their britches this year and are in the SEC and they're like, hey, we were in the college football playoff last year and we're in it this year. And like, they might not even, they're like Scatahoo, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like maybe. They might be thinking that way. And then he comes to town and just rolls you over. It was funny. I actually had a friend, he's here. He's a big ASU fan, and I saw him at church on Sunday, and he was like, or no, it was Saturday. We went to his house, and we did like a family get together and watched a little movie. And he was like, "Dude, so are you finally rooting for ASU?" And I was like, "No, definitely rooting for ASU to do well. One for the Big 12, and two because I think they have the highest chance of upsetting." But anyway, sorry. So keep going.
So I think you'll end up with Texas versus ASU. Now we're talking about, I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and say that ASU, either they're going to come out and smack them in the mouth But if they don't, though, if they come out and they're flat at all, I think Texas is going to walk away with it.
They can't do their second half thing either, where they kind of let off the gas.
Yeah, exactly. I think that Ohio State against probably Penn State, Boise State against Penn State, I would love for Boise State to win. I think that Ashton Jante is very, very good. Again, this is one of those where it's like, I believe that Boise State can win this game. I know they can because they came so close to beating Oregon. But I think that just because it's me and because I want them to win, I think that Boise State will probably lose. I think that Notre Dame will lose to Georgia, 1,000%. I would love for Notre Dame to win. In the long run, I'm going to say Ohio State probably beats Oregon. Second time around, I'm just so impressed with Ohio State this year. Again, that's not what I want to happen. Almost in every case, what I want to happen is opposite of what I think is going to happen. So I'd love for it to be Oregon versus ASU and Boise State versus Notre Dame. But I think it's going to be Ohio State versus either ASU or Texas, and then Penn State versus Georgia. Georgia will beat Penn State. Ohio State will beat whoever they play. You'll have Georgia versus Ohio State, and I'm going to say Ohio State's probably going to win out.
Interesting.
Now, if it went the way I want it to, I would say Oregon beats ASU. Probably Notre Dame beats Boise. And then you have Boise State. Oh, gosh. Sorry, I'm fumbling all over my words right now. Notre Dame plays Oregon in the championship, and I don't care who wins. I like both those teams.
Yeah, I think for me, I have a very similar path. I kind of think the same thing's going to happen. And I couldn't bring myself to pick Ohio State to win that game. So I know with like our circle of friends, I don't necessarily have like a hatred for Ohio State that some people have, but I think I'm kind of like, whatever. And I will say, I know we have a lot of SEC hate in our, like that we talk about a lot, but I do really like Georgia, and I do think it's going to be Georgia, Ohio State, or Georgia, Oregon. And I picked Georgia over Ohio State in the title game that I picked, but basically I had the same thing as you, exact same other than Georgia beating Ohio State. If I were to pick like my fantasy world, decision, I'm like, my title game is like Boise versus Oregon or something, or Notre Dame or something like that. I'm a big fan of Boise whenever BYU is not playing them. And then I have my like, okay, realistic, but still wants, it's like, I think Oregon, Texas, Notre Dame, Penn State in the championship game. 'Cause it's like, those are big teams that can be there, but that haven't been there in a long time. And it would be really fun to see some of those guys do that. So, but yeah, like if ASU made it, I would totally be rooting for ASU. I would be rooting for SMU. I don't know. So
I will say this. I'm already pretty darn content with three of the four first round byes being Oregon, ASU, and Boise State. Like, I'm already happy just with that. The fact that...
Dude, an SMU-Boise game would be sweet to get one of those guys into the semis.
Oh, it'd be so great. So, real quick, because I have like 1% battery left. Just because we talked about it, about doing it this week, and because the Heisman Trophy was awarded this week, really fast comparison. Ashton Jante, number one in rushing yards for 2,497 yards, which was 42% of Boise's offensive production. Travis Hunter, sixth in receiving yards, 1,152 yards, or 24% of Colorado's offensive production. Okay, so first compared to sixth. Ashton Jante, first in rushing touchdowns. Travis Hunter, second in receiving touchdowns. Of those 14 receiving touchdowns, how many of those came against AP top 25 teams? None. Ashton Janti, first in yards per carry, first in yards after contact. Travis Hunter, fifth in receptions, 17th in interceptions, 8th in pass deflections. Bottom 1,000th for below 1,000 for tackles, total tackles. Don't tell me that, oh, good corners don't have lots of tackles because no one do. If you're a good cornerback, you're getting your head in the pile, you're making tackles, okay? There are other cornerbacks who are higher than 1,000th place in solo tackles, okay? Which, by the way, going back to Ashton Janti, do you know who's in second place for rushing yards on the season, Dylan?
I saw it earlier.
Janti, Ashton Janti, if you count his yards after contact.
That's insane. I actually did not know that.
Like, he has, I think it was like 35 or 65 more yards of rushing than the person who's in second place if you only count his season for yards after contact. Okay? My biggest couple things about this whole Heisman discussion, you know, Ashton Janti only got that many yards because of he got 30 carries a game. That's ridiculous. He's having an incredible year. And what do people say about Travis? I'm not sure how many, but they're just saying he's only getting so many yards because he gets so many handoffs. It's like, well, what do you guys say about Travis Hunter? The most impressive thing, oh, because he plays both sides of the ball. No one else has played this many snaps. I'm like, so you're arguing for Travis Hunter because of his volume, because of his longevity, but then you're using that same discussion to say that Ashton Janti doesn't deserve the Heisman?
He's averaging 7.3 yards per carry, by the way, which is like if you take out, okay, that was a bad idea. If you take out like receivers that have one attempt for 41 yards, it's like among the top, let's see, 20 running backs. I had to get down to 22 before I saw someone with a higher average, which it was slightly higher, and he's got 1,300 yards less than Janti. So,
yeah.
Oh, 29 touchdowns, by the way.
Regarding Ashton Janti's volume, because of games where Boise State has been up by enough points to sit their starters, he sat for about 8 quarters, which is 2 full games. So Ashton Janti is going to break the all-time rushing record, essentially after having sat out 2 full games, compared to a guy whose coach, Deion Sanders, decided to keep in all of his starters during blowouts so that he could pad Travis Hunter's stats. So what would his stats be like if he actually sat during blowouts, right? People say that Ashton gets more games to break the record, the rushing record, because of extended playoff, but he's on pace to break that record in his first bowl game, which is exactly what Barry Sanders had, a regular season, a conference championship game, and one bowl game. And then the last stat, I think, that just blows my mind. Ashton Janti has had more 20-yard rushes this year than he has had rushes for loss.
That's crazy.
Okay. So, in my mind, totally robbed. I don't think... Travis Hunter, super talented. Really amazing. But I think it's a novelty. I think the people saying he plays both ways, why he deserves the Heisman Trophy, that is a novelty. It's not something that nobody can do. It's just the world just doesn't work that way. Coaches don't want players to play both ways because why would you when you have enough talent in the country where you can have someone focus on one side of the ball? It's a carnival trick. It's a novelty. It's something that Deion allowed because he saw that Travis Hunter was a unique individual. Really, really cool, but I don't think it deserved the Heisman Trophy. I think you had a guy who's going to break an all-time record and will be remembered forever. In the record books versus a guy who was not even top 5 in his position group all the way across this year. So that's my take on the Heisman Trophy. Do you have anything to add, Deion?
Yeah, just real quick. So I will say that I think the gap is closer than I thought it was originally because Travis Hunter is in a lot of major. I get the tackles one, but in a lot of other major stat categories, he's top 6 in. So I get that. I think we had this discussion. I think that the Heisman went with novelty over like true excellence, which is a shame. I think it's closer. I can kind of understand why they did it. Ashton Janti should be the Heisman winner. I just want to be clear on that. I think what else is really difficult for me, Travis Hunter won the Biletnikoff Award for the best receiver and not a man named Nick Nash who won the Triple Crown this year, which you're thinking that's a horse race. No, he was top in receptions, top in yards, top in touchdowns, and he did not win receiver of the year. That is insane to me.
How do you, and people say, oh, it's because he's in the Mountain West. I don't care what conference you're, like, you still have to play football. And by the way,
guess who number two was? The guy for Bowling Green. Guess who number three was? The guy for Arizona, Tetrairoa McMillan, who won three games or five games this year.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, come on, man. Make it make sense. So anyway, I'm literally running on fumes here.
I got you.
Wrap this up before we get cut off. So I thought this was a good episode. I hope everyone has a chance to listen to it. Get some feelers out there for the college football playoff. We will be back next week to prepare some film for the BYU versus Colorado game, the Alamo Bowl, on Saturday, December 28th at 5:30. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. We appreciate you. We love you. Have a good week.